Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Chauncey Bivitz. He considers himself a recreational BP, a recreational AP, and he's been a BP. He's been around for years, and Richard has known him for years, and he's worked for casinos, and then he became a player, and we're going to talk to him. Chauncey Bivitz, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thank you for having me.
I just want to correct what Bob just said, that you worked for casinos and then became a player. It's actually the opposite of that, which is you were a player and then became a dealer, which seems really crazy. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into how that happened.
Well, I blame you, Munchkin, because you've often – not often, but I've heard you say on the show a few times that it would be good for advanced players to learn how to be a dealer. It improves your game. It helped you in your game early on, and I would say that was absolutely true. Definitely interesting, and I learned a lot.
So how did you get started in games?
Well, I'll tell you that, but real quick before we get started, I just want to congratulate you guys on your 10 years.
Thank you.
I know a little bit about how much work goes into these sorts of things and time and editing, and so my guess is you don't do it for the money.
To say the least.
But it's much appreciated. There's a lot of us out here. Every time I hear the show, I always learn something, that's for sure. I've been playing games since I was a kid. My father was always teaching us games and board games and card games. And I found out later on in life, after he passed, that he actually played cards with the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. So they were the guys that kind of originally came up with the solution of blackjack. And he played with them down at the Aberdeen Proving Grounds.
So, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I met a couple of them, and they said, do you know Dave? And they said, oh, yeah, he was great. So that was nice. But I've just always had an interest in gaming and games. And then later on, I met a guy that was a pro, and he kind of brought me into that. And then also I, on my own, kind of discovered the online gaming and gambling, and that worked out well. And done some video poker, a number of different things. But originally as a kid, no doubt.
So how much playing gambling did you actually do before you started working for a casino?
Well, it's on and off over the years. But sometimes it's full time for sure. But I would say a month a year, something like that, 2 months at the most.
But you got recruited by some pretty high-level APs to be a BP for them. Sorry for all these acronyms. How did that happen?
It was just basically asked. I would you be interested in doing this? And I jumped at it. It really was a lot of fun and very interesting. And I was pretty green, but I learned a lot, and I paid attention. And many, many thanks to all those guys and women that pointed me in the right direction.
Did you ever play in Richard's secret game?
I've played in secret games, not at the same time. No.
Really? I thought we did play together at least one trip, I thought.
I can think of – well, one I'm thinking of, I didn't think we were there at the same time, but – I could be wrong about that.
I thought I was on a trip with you to Biloxi one time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right.
And
that's
I right. seem yeah, to remember was... a purple PT Cruiser for some reason. It was a rental car.
Yes. It's hard to be cool on a PT Cruiser, but yeah. Yeah, that was – yeah, that's true. I remember that.
The Frugal Plum. All right. So what kind of – how did you learn to be a dealer?
So there were some new casinos going in on the East Coast, and they had schools for it. And so I just signed up. It was about $400 for blackjack and then maybe a couple hundred more for carnival games. I did roulette and baccarat, which included paigao. So it covered most of the bases. And it was 5 weeks, I think, for the initial one. And the nice thing about it was that you got reimbursed for the cost if you stayed at the casino for a year, which it was like, you know, getting blood out of a stone, but they did pay us back eventually, which was okay. And it was a good group. We're all very excited, a new casino. And
So when you signed up for this, you knew that you would have a job if you went through the school?
Well, I didn't. But it turns out that if you had a pulse, they would take you. They needed dealers. And I was looking around the class thinking, geez, man, they're never going to make it. And everybody made it. Not a problem. So
I remember when my son went through dealer school, he called me up at one point, totally frustrated. And he said, we spent an hour and a half in class today on how much a $7 blackjack pays. Like, they could not figure out how much to pay a $7 blackjack. So,
well, was it 6-5 or 3-2?
It was 3-2, but whatever.
Yeah, there were some people that I knew weren't going to last very long, and certainly they didn't. But
I want to go, why did you decide? I mean, first of all, we should say you had a pretty successful business in software, right, of your own.
Correct. Yep.
So it wasn't like you needed the money.
No, I was, well, basically retired, and at the insistence of my wife, I needed to get out of the house. So. It seemed like a good opportunity.
So did you deal all games in casinos?
Not craps. And by the way, when I went into this, I was thinking, well, how hard can it be? You know, I've seen plenty of dealers and what they're doing. It's hard. It's a lot harder than you think. I have a lot of respect, particularly for craps dealers now. And like any specialization, I guess, the more, you know, if you make it look easy, that means you're really good at it. And a lot of times they make it look easy, and it's not. You know, there's a lot there. I think that – oh, go ahead.
I didn't find blackjack really hard at all. No. But roulette can be yes. Daunting if you have a lot of action on a roulette table.
Yeah, that was fun. I liked that. But it was harder than I expected. I guess I would say that. Yeah. And I think also to be a good dealer, to do all the games, including those ridiculous carnival games, you need your 10,000 hours. You know, it really takes about that much time.
Now, was game protection in what you learned, or did they care about that in the school?
Not at all. And even on the floor, dealers knew little or very little or cared very little, to be honest, about game protection. And I didn't either. I mean, even if I saw – if there's somebody cheating, I would point that out, and I'd call them out on that. But I would never point out, you know, someone who's counting or something like that. And sometimes you can see new guys that are counting. You can tell, you know, they're
their lips
learning.
Move.
Yes. Take their shoes off and their socks off. But they, you know, I'll try and – well, if it's a – I want them to know also maybe they're on a continuous shuffle table. So, you know, it's not going to help, but – some things like that. But no, the protection, and I honestly don't think like floors in general. Well, the structure is you got a dealer, then a floor person, then a pit boss, and then the manager, the shift manager. And the floors in general, I don't think cared much or knew much about how to protect the game. Pit bosses did, and this eye in the sky would pick off some things once in a while, but it wasn't, I mean, they want to protect things in terms of procedure. They're very strict about that, but in terms of, you know, if I'm finding some, if I can think somebody's, you know, taking advantage one way or the other, no, there was very, very little of that.
Did you ever spot anybody cheating?
Yeah, Yeah, a few times. There's one guy that went to jail. He was past posting on a three-card poker game. And I'm sure I missed some, but I would catch and I'd kick him off the table or not deal to him. You get one warning was my rule. And I either flicked a chip off the top or something like that. But I didn't like that at my table.
Now, how long in advance did you know what you were going to deal on this particular shift?
Right. And I think this is part of game protection for the casinos is that I wouldn't know until I got there. Or they wouldn't post it until about an hour before the shift begins. So, and especially early on, that's kind of tough because if it's a game that you haven't dealt much or, you're still not familiar with, then, if I knew a few hours ahead of time or something, I could just warm up or practice or get in that mode of that particular game. But at this casino, no, there was no warning. And over time, they would migrate people into particular games. So if you're a good backer or a dealer, they put you over there. But generally speaking, it was pretty random.
How many different carnival games did they have that you might end up on?
At least six. It changed over time. Yeah, six or seven. And then the wheel, everybody's favorite.
And did you run to a different table every 40 minutes or whatever? Or did you have like three tables and then a break?
Well, if you were a relief, you would have to deal all the four different games. So one, you have a table for the day, but then, so let's say you have four dealers and the fifth dealer is relief, and they'll come in and relieve each of the other four dealers for a break. So you could easily end up dealing, Ultimate Blackjack and Casino War and three-card poker and four-card poker all on the same shift. And that was could be kind of rough.
But so this casino was a return club. If you were on one game, you were on that game all day if you weren't the relief.
Right.
Huh.
So did they tell you how good you were?
No. And, you mentioned that question or the written questions. And that was very frustrating. I mean, after you had a 3-month probation period, and if you didn't survive the 3 months, they just kick you. And then at that point, you're eligible for health insurance and things like that. But from that point forward, nothing. I mean, no feedback. I mean, no best practices. And there's so many things they could have done better from a management point of view. What are you weak at? Or what are your strengths? But no reviews, nothing. No.
Wow.
So just don't mess up.
Well, they let you know that. And that's the other thing that I learned, because I don't make mistakes. So I'm thinking when I go out on the floor, you will make mistakes. I mean, it's just going to happen. And so learning that lesson and being smart about, don't try and correct it yourself. It's someone else's job to fix that.
I have to tell you about one of my favorite mistakes. I was dealing on a game, and there was a really cute girl over near third base who I was just talking to nonstop. And as I'm talking to her, I'm dealing the game, and the guy on first base has a 4 and a 7, and he puts out his money to double down. And without missing a beat, I just spread his cards, and I hit the 7 with a 10, and I hit the 4 with a 3 and a 10, and I continue around the table. And I remember thinking, like, oh, I have a 10 up. That guy shouldn't be splitting those. And I get done. I get to my hand. I turn it over, and I have to hit bang, 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 and I make 21. And I'm going around the table picking up everyone's money, and the guy at first base is like pointing at his cards going, And so I called the boss over, and I go, Don, this guy split a 7 and a 4. Totally blaming him.
Right.
And he just said, you know, give everybody their money back. And he just shook his head at me. He goes, I've been in this business a long time, kid. I never saw anybody do that. But he didn't do anything to me. He didn't write me up or, you know.
I got that message once. I've never seen that before. I got a couple of those. But one, and I did it twice, and I can't explain it. And I've been playing cards all my life and kind of dealing the same direction. I started dealing in the wrong direction, like starting at third base. I've never seen that. Me either. The other thing I did that got a lot of attention once was this wonderful woman. I was dealing the wheel, and she came in with $100 and lost it all. But it was just so nice and so pleasant. She was the only one on the table, and she left. And she came back like 5 minutes later and said, oh, I forgot to tip you. And she took a $5 bill out of her purse and put it right on the table. And I just thought that was the nicest thing. So, and I took it, I put it right in the tote box because no one told me you're not supposed to do that.
Oh, boy, you mean without changing it into a chip?
No, I just put a $5 bill in there. Why not? So that, yeah, even the gaming commission got involved in that.
Oh, Jesus.
No, you can't do that. Well, they happen to be right there. But,
Richard, why would that be? Why would that be a rule? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, because the state has a percentage of every dollar that's dropped in the box, right? They get their tax money based on the drop. So, yeah, so everything has to.
No, I'm with Bob. Why? Who cares? It's still $5.
Yeah, but. I had a dealer.
If it was $7, then we'd be talking about something.
So it sounds like you had tote boxes on your individual tables. But
right.
Where I worked, the dealers, you know, put the tokes in their breast pocket, and then you put them in the tote box when you got tapped off the game. And one of the guys that I worked with forgot a red chip, a $5 chip, in his pocket. And as we were leaving for the night, he realized it, and he pulled it out, and one of the other guys was still at the back door, right? And he said, hey, I forgot this, and he threw it to him. He says, go put this back in the tote box. And the guy said, okay, and went and did it. Somehow that got back to management, and they fired the guy. I mean, it was clear. Yeah, it was clear that the guy had just made a mistake, and he wasn't trying to keep the money. You know, but yeah, they fired him over that.
Wow. Yeah, I got it one time. I put a toke in the tray and didn't realize it. And I and this guy called down and had me correct it.
Oh, wow.
Don't usually have that.
Yeah.
Now, how long did it take you to become a greedy toke whore?
Wow. Whore, I don't know about, but yeah, I mean, you know, look, dealers only get paid $5 an hour. I mean, that's an abomination. I mean, it's a skilled job. If it were up to me, we'd get rid of tokes, you know, pay them a proper salary and treat them professionally. But you do learn things, you know, you learn just, you know, engage and tell some jokes, you know, a few go-to things. And my goal was $200 a day. And even if I was on, you know, depending on what table, you know, you're going to get more or less. But I usually always hit that. And plus my – is an advantage. So I'm older. Plus my English is good. English is good, good. You know, some dealers don't even talk to the players. You know, they're just mechanical. But I had my little jokes. I'll tell you one quick story about a guy who used to always get me tokes. And he would come on the table and put a chip in his mouth. And not, you know, like he'd put up $200. I'd give him his quarters and nickels, and he'd just pick one of them at random and stick it in his mouth like a toothpick. And I mean, I was thinking, bring your own chip or something, you know. I use these things. It's pretty gross. And but one time he got caught in his throat. So he was turning red and everything and choking. And some of the other players tries to give him the Heimlich. That doesn't work. Another one tries. It doesn't work. And then some guy's just walking by. And he walks over to him, just grabs him by the balls, and the chip pops out. And someone says, that's amazing. How did you know how to do that? Are you a doctor? He says, no, I'm a lawyer. So
True story, folks.
All due respect to Bob Necessi and my favorite of your guests. But I would tell that joke when he left the table. After he left the table, I'd usually tell that joke. And
You mean there actually was a guy putting the?
Oh, absolutely. Oh yeah.
God. Although, you know, I remember when I was a dealer hearing about a dealer that they caught who every time he went on break, he would cough and pop a $100 chip into his mouth at the Sands. And, you know, so we're talking about six times a day or whatever. And when they finally caught him, he had been doing this for like 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good move. I never thought of that.
Well, except, Jesus, I can't think of anything sort of dirtier than a casino chip to put in your mouth.
It would build up your immune system.
There you go.
Yeah.
He doesn't need any vaccinations.
Yeah. Now, if somebody never tipped you, did you give them the stink eye or something, or...
No, that's most people. I mean, in fact, when we opened, part of the problem, we were only getting 14, 15 bucks an hour in tokes. But a lot of people didn't know that you should toke or there was even an option. A lot of people who were new to the casino because it was a new casino. So we have to train them up. But most people don't tip, I would say. And they should tip your dealers, people, if you can.
So did you, when somebody else was tipping you, did you instruct the other players, oh, that's a bet for the dealers, we work for tips? Did you get into those kinds of soft hustles?
Sometimes it's gray area, but yeah, definitely. And sometimes the players would help. They'd say, hey, this guy's working hard, come on, you know, throw him.
Yes, like, I love those players when I was a dealer.
The most frustrating one was, let's say somebody hits a big side bet. For, I don't know, $5,000, $10,000 or more. We had one person that won $365,000 and tipped the dealer $200, which, you know, but gave $1,000 to everyone else on the table.
Jesus.
It's like, so those are the ones you kind of would expect to get something. And a lot of times people were generous about that. I mean, you had your regulars and, you know, the people who are there knowing that they, you know, well, I'm probably going to lose some money, but they're there to have a good time. You know, the weekenders, they were a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that. The degenerates and the addicts and these other guys, they weren't tipping.
I had one of the guys on the crap table that I worked with. The shift boss is coming down the pit, and he sees that there is a woman about 60 years old, and she has her hand on his ass next to her. And he looks, and the woman is betting green chips for herself and $5 with odds for the dealers. And the shift boss goes around to the other side and gets in the guy's ear, and he says, you're nothing but a dirty whore. And the dealer says, if she starts betting green chips for me, I'm going to her room.
Exactly. Yeah, there's – and everyone – you know, there's – the more experienced dealers are you know, they're better at it. I mean, when you're a break-in dealer, I mean, you're just scared to death anyway. So you're not relaxed enough to talk and, you know, get people involved and engaged. But, yeah.
Now,
That's part of the job.
Did you – you must have had counters land on your table at some point. Did you engage them, or what did you do?
Well, it depends. I wouldn't call them out or anything. That's fine. And usually it was at the small stakes tables. I didn't see anyone I never dealt high limit. I remember early on, they picked off Bob Necessian, so what? He got locked out.
Bob Necessian got thrown out? For what?
Yep. Being Bob Necessian, wouldn't you?
No, he doesn't know how to play.
I mean, not Bob. What am I talking about? Not Bob. No.
Talking about Tommy Hyland?
Tommy Hyland.
Tommy knows how to play.
That's a big difference, yeah.
Sorry about using my names, but yeah. I didn't see much of that. Although we did have one guy, a local celebrity, who's a DJ called Sebastian. I never liked him much. He replaced Howard Stern in our Hartford station. And he had a system. He thought he could, you know, and it was a cockeyed sort of bet double, then cut it in half. I don't know. It was a weird system. But every once in a while, he'd vary from that. So I thought maybe he really knew what he was doing. So I started counting with him. And no, he didn't. He was really awful. But he would always say on his radio show that he never lost a blackjack. You know, he always won. So you knew that wasn't true. But
so
not
you,
a lot.
If you had a counter at the table, you wouldn't talk to them about it?
Nope.
No, I always did.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, would you talk to him if there was a full table or just
sure.
when he was heads up?
No, even if it was a full table, yeah. I would, you know, usually I would, you know, kind of wait some time. I would wait for them to make a mistake, you know, and then when they made a mistake – I would say, like, you know, 15
that's
against the 10.
That's a plus two. You should have hit it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. 18, yeah. Right. Exactly. Or, so, and they would always freak out, right? Because dealers never know anything about counting cards. And but once it was kind of clear that I wasn't going to bust them, I was just interested in talking about it because I was. You know, obsessed with it too, you know, then a lot of times we would just have a running conversation for 40 minutes about counting cards, you know, while the guy was spreading his bet.
Now, did you feel any obligation to point that out? Or
no,
to...
no, no, not at all.
Now, what about when players made really stupid mistakes, such as standing on an ace five versus anything?
Oh, I would help the players all the time. I would tell them. In fact, I would tell people basic strategy. You know, like I would tell them, hey, you know, you're supposed to hit ace seven against a nine or a ten. Yeah, and I was fortunate that the places I worked didn't care. Like they didn't mind that I was doing that.
I changed my philosophy on that because it's kind of a no-win situation. So if you explain the right thing to do, then and it works out for them, then oh well, we got lucky. I got lucky. But if it doesn't work out, then they blame me because they lost. Or I didn't want to do that. I shouldn't have done that. But there's people that. Do I mean, you know, hitting on 19, standing on 10, things like that, and you can't talk them out of it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when I dealt, the cards were face down in almost all the games I dealt. And I remember hitting a guy one time. I gave him a hit. It was an ace. I come around. I turn over his cards. He's got two 10s. And I said, you hit a hard 20? And he said, I didn't mean to, but when you gave me the ace, I wasn't going to complain.
Well, one thing that would happen once in a while is the floors would come over and offer some advice. Or if there was a hand that everyone at the table is trying to argue their way or the other. And I noticed that the floors, they weren't – well, they generally didn't give good advice anyway, but they would – the advice they were giving was whatever would pay out the most. And so double down or split or whatever it was, even if it wasn't the right play. And I think that was to help the dealers get tokes. You know, they were kind of on our team for that sort of thing. And
But they weren't cut
that.
In, right? They weren't cut in on the tokes?
Nope. Don't, yeah. Just being nice. Yeah.
Actually, I had a boss. Coming right up to shift change. And so, you know, the graveyard shift comes in before the dealers finish. So there's a little bit of a 30-minute overlap. And I'm dealing to a guy, and the guy has all of the green chips. He's got, like, $3,000 in green chips, and he's betting $300-$500 a hand in green. And the boss comes over and he looks at me, goes, you know, you can give him black And I look down at my breast pocket, and he looks, and it's full of green chips that the guy is tipping me. And he just nods his head, and he goes, "I'll go order some more green." It's like, those are the kind of bosses you love, you know?
Yes. Very good.
Now, at your place, were you supposed to call out when players make unusual plays, such as hitting hard 18 or something of that nature?
Splitting 10s.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Always. They wouldn't always listen, but I would always make the call just to cover myself.
Yeah. Did you? One of the things that I found really annoying is when places, they have to call out changing $100 and they have to wait for the boss to acknowledge it or to come over or something, right, which can sometimes take several minutes.
Yep.
Did you have to do that? And did you have to wait?
We could go up, we'd go up to 200, anything over that. Yeah. You'd have to get approval.
Yeah.
As a dealer, what was the biggest winner you had at a blackjack table?
Well, I had on a side bet somewhere around 65,000 on that, maybe 20,000 on the straight blackjack, but nothing dramatic. Like I said, I didn't deal in the high limit. You made me think of one thing about other players being difficult and actually not take. Sometimes they take a shot at the dealer, which really annoyed me. You know, if you have a 18 and then they have a 17, they go, "Oh, push," you know, or just trying to, you know, do these little things. But what bothered me even more when they're doing that to other players, they're trying to hustle chips from another player, or here, let me do your double down bet for you and then not pay him off correctly. So I try and warn when if they're coming to my table, then I tell the other players, you know, watch out for this guy. And sometimes I deal around people, which that got me in trouble. Because I'm old and I don't care. For $5 an hour, I'm not going to put up with a lot of this stuff. And they would either, if they were a Sharpie and I deal around them, then they could just go to another table. But some people would just have a fit and, you know, and just really bad behavior. I mean, it's just awful. There's one guy that was on a table with all of the other players were Asians. He's at first base and he goes, "Geez, man, do these gooks ever shut up?" or something like that. I mean, it's just really inappropriate. And I said, "Well, that's it. You know, you're not on my team." He was really drunk. I said, "Well, you know, I'm not dealing to you." And then, you know, the floor comes over and it's, "Well, no, you got to deal to him." Even I told her what happened, her being Asian. "No, that's it." So they put me on another table. That's the usual thing.
Yeah, I was amazed at the awful shit people would say to the dealers, to the cocktail waitresses. It was amazing. And like you, I would not put up with the shit at all, because I just was not going to put up with it. And I would also, you know, if a guy got too drunk, I would just take his drink away and tell the cocktail waitress, "This guy gets no more to drink." Which, I mean, I'm just a dealer, but, you know, it was like the bosses, some of the bosses were afraid to make any kind of decision about anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And the dealers were the ones that have to take it. You know, I mean, I've been sworn at, spit on. Well, I got peed on my table once. Attempted to.
What?
Oh, yeah. But he wasn't very successful. So then he went over to the craps table and got up, found a little edge of a chair, and then he was more successful over there. But obviously drunk and everything. But what was most interesting to me about that was, and I had just come on the table. I mean, just literally just come on. And these guys come from out of nowhere. I think they rappelled down from the ceiling in these hazmat suits. And they cleaned it up, and they had this whole drill, or they just cleaned everything up, wiped it down. They had the hot air things, and 10 minutes later, the table was up and running. I mean, they don't fool around. Keep the game going. That's the important thing.
Yeah, I had a guy fall off a chair with a heart attack, and the EMTs come and are working on the guy. Not only did I not stop dealing because they told me just keep dealing, but people were trying to step over the guy saying, "Is that seat open? Like, can I have that seat?"
That's nuts.
Yeah, people are nuts in casinos.
Well, they trained us in CPR, or it was optional, and I took the training. But then they told us, well, if someone has a heart attack, you got to watch your rack. You can't wait for security. They'll take care of it. So I don't know what the point of that was. But I would go and try and save their life. Yeah.
Maybe if you're walking to the break room and it happens.
Yeah, that would be allowed.
Since Chauncey would save somebody's life, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back with more black dealing stories. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The promotion in February is free play with a kicker. For players already receiving free play, you pick up your normal amounts Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And if you do that, you get the same amount following Friday or Saturday. Well, make all 8 pickups, and on Monday, March 1st, you receive a double-sized free play. President's Day, there's a $32,000 hot seat promotion where every 3 minutes between 8 a.m. and midnight, some player with his card inserted and having played at least $1 in the previous minute earns $100 in free play. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. Currently active markets has to do with how many votes to convict former President Trump will happen and various times at which people will enter the 2024 race. Our listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. BlackjackApprenticeship.com is an excellent site for those of you who wish to be successful at counting cards at blackjack. The primary value of the membership are the video course, training suite, members forum, pro betting software, casino database, result tracking software, members only podcast, and the members chat room. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on many of the games. The game of the week is Bonus Streak Ultimate X. This is a 10 coin per line version of the game. Like every other Ultimate X game, you earn multipliers on this hand to be played off next hand. Compared to regular Ultimate X, the multipliers are much harder to get, where you typically need three of a kind rather than a pair of jacks or better. But when you get them for several hands in a row. All right, we're back talking with Chauncey Bivitz about his experiences as a dealer. Now, when your table loses to a lot of players, does the floor consider that your fault and give you flack for it?
No, they give me a medal. The games are pretty straight up. I mean, you're going to hit those streaks where you will crush the table, and it's unfortunate. I hate to do it. It's so much more fun when everybody's winning, but that it's just going to happen from time to time, and not much you can do about that.
I did have one thing I wanted to mention before I forget.
As far as my looking at this through the AP lens. And I did learn some things through the training and the deal, just procedure and things like that. But I was much easier for me to spot whole card dealers and things like that. One thing I learned was certain tables, the way the shoe was set up, the dealer would almost have to bring the card over the rack to deal to third base, let's say, or to their own hand. And if you're sitting at third base, you know, that would work out pretty well. There's also, dealers will make mistakes. So when we opened, there's a side bet called the in-between bet. And it's the dealer's up card is literally in between your two up cards. Well, one of the dealers who was in my training and not one of the strong dealers, she for over a week would pay that off if it was a tie. So, for example, if you have a 10 and an 8 and the dealer has a 9, that's in between. And that'll pay off like 10 to 1. And she would pay off if it was an 8, 9, or 10, which was pretty nice if you were a player.
I mean, I want to play at her table.
Yeah.
I could beat that game, I think.
Yeah. And in carnival games, a lot of times, even the floors don't quite know the games that well. So we had Casino War. A lot of people paid that off wrong. So there's opportunities. So I think what I'm saying is the better you know the game and, you know, how well you know it, then you can find these opportunities.
Did they sweat the money where you were working?
No.
Yeah, they didn't care at all.
Nope. I was at maybe a $15 blackjack table, and a guy came in for $20,000 and didn't really blink an eye. But I tried to explain to him, this is not where you want to be. it's a continuous shuffle machine, and, you know, you go over to the higher tables, you'll do better. It'll be a better game for you. And he agreed, and they let him take his chips and walk over there. I didn't have to color him up or anything.
You didn't think, like, I'm the most personable dealer here, and I'll you know, make the most tips this way?
Didn't occur to me, but he was new. It was his first time there, so I wanted to treat him well. Yeah.
Was there standardized penetration at the casino, or could players get better penetration with an appropriate tip, or how did that work?
Right. Well, there's no slot on the shoe, so it was up to the dealer to do that. They did keep an eye on that. If you are cutting thin, the eye in the sky, that's one of the procedure things that they really did watch, or make sure you're spinning your cards right and doing proper shuffles. So I didn't see that. It didn't happen with me, but I could see where that could work.
How much were you supposed to cut?
Well, anywhere between 1.5 and 2 decks is what they wanted. I usually went 1.5.
One time I had a counter on my table, and, you know, as I say, we're talking nonstop about counting cards, and I get tapped out, and I go on a break, and I come back, and the dealer who had been my relief goes, "What the hell happened?" And I go, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "I almost ran out of cards. You put the cut card like 6 cards from the end." I was like, "Yeah, well, you have to shuffle less that way."
Yeah, I can see where there could be some human engineering that would make that work. Oh, there's one other thing that I found in the dealer training school. We were dealing Baccarat. They had a new system. It's got to be out there somewhere. We dropped it because it didn't work quite right. But it's an automated system that reads the cards as they come out of the shoe. So you set the player and banker. Well, if there's no more cards that are going to come out of the shoe, a little red indicator light comes on the shoe. So if you were sitting at third base, you could see that, knowing that no more cards are coming out, meaning there's a higher chance of it being a tie. And I think you could bet that, but it would be past posting. So maybe you could get a dealer to approve that. You know, we haven't looked at the cards yet. Can I put in a tie bet? Or, you know, that maybe they're both naturals or something. But I offer that for free.
How could there be no cards left in the shoe? I mean, aren't you putting card?
No, you're not going to pull any more cards.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Huh. So there'll be no hit card.
Right. And the machine knows that. And why they have an indicator light to tell you that, I don't know. And if you physically try and take a card out by mistake, it won't allow you to do that.
What kind of things did you talk about in the break room?
It was mostly pretty boring. And people would kind of organize themselves in their groups. So the young, hip people are over there, and the old people are here. And by race a lot of times, particularly with language. You know, so we had a lot of Puerto Rican dealers, and my Spanish is okay, so I could sit at their table. But
we played a lot of cards in the break room, surprisingly. Yeah, I mean, for money. We would play gin rummy, clabiash, things like that. Tonk was very popular.
Well, how long was your break?
20 minutes.
Huh. Yeah, because that's barely enough. Plus, we have a ways to go to get to the break room. So you can either go to the bathroom, or you got three choices. Go to the bathroom, get something to eat, or have a smoke. And you might be able to do two out of three, but that's it.
We also had a longer break in the middle of the day to eat. So we had a 30-minute break, in the middle of the day. But what about – were there fraternization rules, like between the bosses and the dealers, or between the players and the dealers and the players?
Yes. I mean, not amongst the dealers, obviously. So they're always chasing each other. But definitely not with players. Although I did manage to, I got some of my regulars and these friendly guys, and there was a bunch of Asian players that were horrible, horrible players. And I said, look, why don't I teach you a class? I'll do a class. And I even put something together. I want to do it for the local adult education. So how to improve your casino ROI, return on investment. And I have the felts, and, from when I was practicing myself. And so I went to his house and we had a little party, and they didn't listen to anything, but it was a good time. They came back to my table and played just as horribly. But, I think that would have been inappropriate, if they got onto that, I'm sure. And also, they did come down on some pit bosses for just comments to women dealers, just stuff you could get away with back in the day. And these guys were old-time workers, and this is the real corporate world here now, and that's not allowed. And they lost their job.
Well, we had non-fraternization policies, right, between the bosses and dealers. Even though, bosses ended up dating dealers sometimes. But at one point, they almost fired everybody because we formed a investment club. And it was a group of bosses and dealers who were interested in investments. And we were going to – everybody throw in like $100 a month, and we were going to figure out things to invest in. And management found out about it, but they would have had to fire almost everyone on the shift, and which you can't do, and replace everybody immediately. So we got a very stern warning and had to disband the investment club. And
why would they be against that?
Well, I guess they were afraid that it might lead to collusion, where you become friendly with a boss. Suddenly you have a boss and a dealer together who bring in an agent to rip off the casino or something.
Now, in blackjack basic strategy, do any of the dealers know it? Any of the bosses know it?
No. Well, I would say the people who trained us knew it, and they were typically pit bosses. Dealers know some, maybe. There were far more dealers that thought they knew basic strategies than actually did.
They they know.
Yes. But I think that was fine.
Was there any discussion about card counters among the dealers?
Well, some, but I noticed the hate for card counters, especially in APs in general, as you go up the line, was more and more irrational and extreme. I mean, they really didn't like it because you're cheating, and somehow you're cheating me out of my money, which never made sense, but they didn't like that. But dealers know that's not our job. you guys need to protect from that.
What kind of stuff did you get reprimanded for?
Mostly, the main thing was not dealing to people. You know, I get in arguments with the players once in a while, and you know, they just didn't like that. Well, they would always put the problem was they put me on like Spanish 21. I don't know why, but that just attracts horrible human beings. Just one time they put me on because the dealer was there, was the Asian dealer. She was crying. I mean, these guys are so mean and so awful. You know, she just was crying. It was just terrible. So they know that, you know, plus I think it helps being a guy. But, they're just bad people. So if I would not deal to somebody, they didn't like that at all.
In the show notes you sent us, you once said you put fishing worms in a shared refrigerator. Now, why would you do that?
Doesn't everybody? Yeah, they didn't like that. I didn't know. When you put things in the fridge, you put your name on it. And I had my worms because I was going to go fishing after work. And you don't want to keep them in your hot car all day because then you have worm soup. So it seemed fine to me. But they were cleaning out. It was the clean out the refrigerator day. So they looked in the bag and they saw it was there and it had my name on it. So I still don't see why it's a problem. I mean, it's not like they're getting out or anything.
Yeah, I don't see why that would be a problem either. I mean, people aren't supposed to be eating your stuff anyway, right? So stay out of my bag.
But it did cause a fuss.
So how long did you last as a dealer?
A little over a year and a half. And well, actually, right up until COVID. So that was a real fun day. It was my favorite day. It was when the Gaming Commission said we're shutting down the casinos at midnight. And we decided we're going to close the tables at around 9:30 just to get everything set up. Well, the word went out to all the degenerates that this is the last day. And they just came in, like, from out of nowhere. And people are complaining because they can't get on a table. And, you know, it was pandemonium. And But every time I dealt a hand, I go, tick-tock, MFers. I just couldn't wait to be rid of them.
And would you go back, or you had your fill?
It'd have to be the right setup, part-time, on weekends. Yeah, I mean, there were times when it was so much fun, I would pay them to let me deal. I mean, it really could be a great time if you have the right table. I always got my frat boys would come down from the colleges. And, I'd always use a line from a Chevy Chase movie. I said, look, why don't we just go out back right now? You give me half your money and I'll kick you in the nuts. Ha, 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 ha. Very funny. And then after a couple hours, they always said, oh, we should have taken that kick in the nuts. But they were fun. They just were having a good time. They wanted a couple of free drinks. And that's a lot of fun. So I would do that anytime.
I have to agree with you. I had most of the time, I had a lot of fun as a dealer. And I've said many times, actually, when I'm 80 years old, I'd like to have a job like one night a week dealing the big six. You know,
there you go. Well, I did stumble onto there's these companies that do like charitable things and company parties, these big giant parties. And they have they have tables at them and they're always looking for dealers. And I've done that a bunch of times, and that is a blast. I mean, I can make up my own rules. it's all for charity, and nobody really cares, and all having a good time. That is a good job. I recommend that to anybody.
See, I am afraid we have run out of time. We still have lots more questions for Chauncey. We're going to try to twist his arm and see if we can get him back again soon. But it's been fun. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
At the end of our show, we have a recommended section. Richard, do you have anything for us today?
I do. My recommended this week is, I think it is the best book that I've read in the last 5 years. And it's a book called Endurance. It's by Alfred Lansing. And it is the true story of this British explorer, Ernest Shackleton, who in 1914, they went to Antarctica and they were going to try to cross it over land. And the ship got stuck in the ice and they could not get the ship out. And so he and the crew had to travel across Antarctica on foot to try to survive. And the ship, you know, the ice actually crushed the ship completely. So anyway, it is so well written. I highly recommend it. It's again, it's called Endurance, and it's by Alfred Lansing.
Very good. Chauncey, do you have anything to tell our listeners about?
Sure. Anyone I know that's read Endurance recommends that also, so I'm going to jump on that. Another book I just finished was A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles. It's been around for a little while, but it's really well done. And I have a connection to Moscow and that hotel where he – this is about a guy that had to live in a hotel as his punishment and his throughout his life. It's well done, well written, highly recommended. And also I now have Netflix. And I've been watching – I finished Lilyhammer and Kim's Convenience. They're both really cute and fun.
I have read Gentleman in Moscow. I very, very much enjoyed that. I concur with Chauncey's recommendation. All right. So thank you, Chauncey. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.